It all takes me back, and there's a bit of my theme, I suppose, which is a bit of here we go again, and yet things are new and things are happening, and I think there are differences, and inspiration is the spider, that the spider has to try and try again to build the web, and we need to keep on going at different ways we tackle this, and each time round we get a new insight, a new way to do things. And just recently, we've been spending a lot of time with Yanis Dimitriadis, and Gráinne and her team, looking at the way in which open educational resources can help inspire the work of designs. So I said it took you back, and James should definitely recognize this. I spent a very pleasant time in Australia in 2004, and given the way academic publications happen, this arrived in 2006, where we talked about what is it that we're trying to achieve with the work we were doing on learning design, work that Peter Goodyear was doing on pedagogic patterns, and the work that James was doing on LAMS. And we said, well, what we really want is something like this, something that helps you find things, has some representation, and then behind it all is the real stuff. And so sort of that we fundamentally, and I think if we look at Diana Lorillard's breakdown as well earlier today, if you're in that session of what she's trying to do with the work she's been doing, the LD Seeker, it's sort of searching, trying to find what it is that we're after, but what it is we're after should sufficiently explain itself as a set of patterns that enable you to do something about it, blueprints. The work of the language of patterns comes originally from the architecture side, but I think it's much in terms of sewing patterns, and it is interesting. Yes, there really are sewing patterns for dummies. And the result can be something rather different. There's the Sydney Olympic Stadium, there's the Beijing Olympic Stadium, and there's the London Olympic Stadium. And it is sort of how the idea of building things can inspire people in different ways is what's so attractive about the pattern concept and the design concept. But you're still left with a really difficult job. And so I thought about for my next slide, I'd try and summarize the efforts that we'd put into in the sort of the intervening time. And it's very, so this is my next slide. I felt we sort of disappeared into a bit of a black hole together with Di. It's interesting that Di's managing to crawl out the black hole having found something. We worked on services. We worked on what is this chat thing that you're meant to be able to call from iOS Learning Design? We produced the SLED player. But all the while, we were trying to do something bigger than that. And so as I say, perhaps that's my best representation for some of that work. But in parallel, sort of, where I personally went off to was working very much on open educational resources. So working on the Open Learn system for the Open University. And this is a very big movement where the key to it is permission to the world to make whatever use they can of the resources we put out. So following a Creative Commons license, making things freely available, stop hiding everything away, which is very much the tendency in universities and was definitely a tendency in the Open University where we kept tight control of our content. So the move to actually making it available for free. But freeness, openness changes things. And so just to sort of flick through the sort of impact you've got. So this is a 6-month slot, isn't it? We've had getting on for 6 million people visits since we launched 2006, late 2006. So you get a lot of people. There's the many eyes aspect to this, and I think it's one of the things that we tend to forget a bit is the vast interest there is actually in educational resources from a mixture of learners and teachers and institutions, and random people. So sort of getting on for 2 million people visiting in a six-month period. And the breakdown in that pie chart sort of shows we still appeal most to the UK, but less than half our users are from within the UK. So it's a very international group of people who find the resources. And they find it for different reasons. They find it because they're searching for us in particular. They find us for spirulina. Yes, spirulina and eutrophication. Oh, I should never try and say that word. Eutrophication, something like that, are very specialist areas which we happen to have something on. So you attract the specialists. But the main thing is that this is the top of a huge list of reasons that people come to the site. And these are the particular sort of top 10 for that month, start writing fiction. We can break down then, I think, I look at sort of why people come to those sites. So you get a whole load of reasons that people are coming. But if we look at not just our resources, but other ones in the open educational resource world, what is it they're finding? And we need to sort of drill down a bit into all those people we're attracting, and we're attracting people who bounce off us. You know, it's not necessarily that we're really engaging them. We need to see what it is that engages people and how we can offer these resources to other teachers to engage people. So this is OER Commons, which is an aggregation engine for open education resources. And this is the level of information you get if you go there. You get abstracts that tell you a bit of what it's about. Nothing about the approach for teaching at all. And indeed, if you go on to some of the sites, this is the MIT OpenCourseWare, it just sits it in its existing context. It doesn't try and explain how you could teach with this material. This is from Open University, One Open Learn. It is distance learning material. It's a bit more self-explanatory, but it still isn't trying to help you get the best out of it. And I think here I start to overlap with the view that you were expressing, Simon, about what it is that helps people get the best out of these things, examples of youth. And indeed, we know that this is one studying arts and humanities that generates a lot of good activity. We can see where people do the exercises, people leave behind artifacts in terms of little tasks they've completed and put on the forum or put in their learning journals. But another one, a business one, which superficially is similar, but it's got no entries in its forum. Nobody does the internal tasks. Sort of what is it that helps one work in this new open context and doesn't help the other work? So, we thought about this when we launched OpenLearn, and we produced, based on the pattern approach, a thing called a pattern analysis template. And there's two people in the audience who look at this and go, oh, no. Well, maybe three if I count myself. That this was a worthy exercise in trying to build up those design collections. And by analysing, looking through how the material worked, giving the overviews, looking at the world of pedagogic patterns. But it was not part of the real workflow. It wasn't part of how the people were produced in the first place. So I can reuse my earlier slide. So I feel a lot of what we tend to talk about it first in the work we do is a bit too idealistic. We imagine that people would produce all these wonderful things that other people then get great value out of. And so we also went on to sort of think about how Compendium LD would help us in this, sort of trying to move away from the need for a very detailed representation. And we just last week we were carrying out workshops sort of where we were in this midst of changing our views So from that, we got some very interesting data coming back to us. So we sort of ran a two-half workshop. And again, a couple of people here were in that workshop. We ran a two-half workshop. The first half was where we sort of looked at this position we'd developed in terms of what we'd ideally like, and even presented people with something close to the ideal. And that's Gronje and Yanis, who were very much involved in this process. And sort of the observations that came out, just quickly gathered from round, was this is a difficult task. It's very difficult to build these designs. Your comment that the school children could do it in 20 minutes and actually took them 3 hours, well, they're doing very well, aren't they? It's really difficult. And even then, you don't end with a single thing that you can share. Everything's a variable. People leave different things out. Actually, it then turned out that you really need to explain what you've done. The social dimension is needed. So you end up with as you try and add this design to help people use your materials and all of this vast amount of open education resources, so there are tens of thousands of resources now in the OER area, never mind the rest that are out there for free in other ways. So, right, stop hitting your head against the brick wall. Well, it's a message to me. Stop hitting my head against this brick wall. That there's a different view of what we're trying to do, I think, rather than going back and analysing and trying to build up this, what remains an ideal and remains worthy in many ways, the extraction of designs from all of these entities. And I say, I think my understanding of what Simon's been doing is with the news films, so, the film archive fits a bit to what I'm going to say next and where we're going at the moment. So I'd just like to turn over to you now for a very short time. So if you could get sufficiently close to another person in this rather spread out audience that you can talk to them. So and I'm going to ask you to talk to each other, but in a special way. So I would like the person, arbitrarily, to click and say, from the person on the left to talk for exactly 1 minute about the different types of learning and teaching approaches that you feel you need. How many things would you need to inspire you to help teach somebody? You can talk about examples, but just do it for 1 minute while the other person listens quietly. Okay, thank you. That was 1 minute. Now, if the person who is talking could keep quiet, please, and listen to the other person think through the same issue. Thank you. Okay, thank you. That's complete. Now the question, which the odds are you haven't actually talked about, but the question was how many. And so I'd like to sort of get a feel. So how many think less than 10?
Can you repeat that?
How many different types of learning and teaching approaches do you need? And my question is, how many people think less than 10? Oh, maybe I should have asked this in a greater time. 10 to 20? Okay, more than 20? Just so I don't have to keep... How high a number?
Well, I said there were infinite variations.
Infinite, okay, that's pretty high, so I'll stop doing it in sets of 10. Okay, right.
You keep going, Patrick.
Thank you very much for that exercise. So first, I'll talk about the exercise itself. It was a variant, actually, on what's called the think, pair, share, which means you think individually. The variant is I asked you to think aloud, because otherwise it gets too oppressive. The pairing, which means that you work with somebody else, again, sort of cut that down slightly, because it'd be nice to have more feedback in that process, but just listening is amazing feedback. And sharing, so I've now got, and you've now got, a view of what collectively happened there. So it's a variant on think, pair, share, and that's one of these patterns which has been referred to by Gronje and Andrew. So it's part of a collection which is in this To Appear paper from Davinia and her team and Yanis. So they've produced a collection of a relatively small number, actually it's about a dozen, but they are just about the collaborative elements, and then it's beginning to accrete a few more patterns to do with assessment and things like that. But the answer is, I agree, the answer should be that we've got a relatively small number of things that help guide people with infinite variations. But actually, the power of latching on to these small number of things and trying to then communicate them through social situations, workshops, virtual workshops, seems to us at the moment a much more powerful way of directing people to get the best out of open educational resources, rather than the actually quite attractive academically work of looking into these and trying to understand the structures that people have used in practice. And it's partly a realization that when you're dealing with these great numbers, that people are not going to follow through particular patterns in any case that you've laid out to them, but they are going to follow the advice. And the example I gave earlier about the two cases on Open Learn, where one case did all the exercises, it was in the advice. The advice said specifically, now go and write 250 words. And it's amazing how many people were very obedient and wrote 250 words on the forum. And the other one said, carry out this exercise. And it didn't say specifically. And it's sort of giving the right advice. As Andrew's already said, we've had a go ourselves at being inspired by this by having a relook at the Spanish course, and Gronje referred to it first part, so I won't need to say much about that. So it sort of moved us to this idea that we've got this relatively small set of designs that we want to collect. It's very easy to grow it, though, because you start thinking, well, you want four that are collaborative designs, four that are individuals, or whatever, and so our aim is to try and be low in number, and I think maybe Simon's experience would say how low you can go in sort of inspiring people to find, and then sort of say, how can you then get the best impact from open educational resources rather than embed these results within them? So our next steps, we're within the AllNet project, which is our funded work, which is a research project across various aspects of looking at how we are sort of affecting the teaching and learning world. We're going to produce virtual workshops using CloudWorks as the base. We've got this OED Lite or open design or open education design. We're a bit variable on quite what we call it at the moment. And Yotta, who's sitting in the audience and who started working with us yesterday, is going to be doing a gather round of candidates for that initial set, and we want to apply it in practice. We are also, as well as virtual workshops, continuing and running face-to-face ones. We'd be very interested in you coming to one at ECTEL, which is in Nice in September. We're running a workshop, but we're actually building up a series of workshops that connect, and we're getting refinements as we go. So we see the social side is very important in communicating. So we aim to communicate a relatively small number of things that can actually change the value that people get out of all the resources out there and add the social layer that seems to be missing from what's been in the past. And I think that's the end. So we're doing our try again, and I hope it's not the brick wall or the black hole that I'm falling into once more. But it can be fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. That's great. I wonder if you've just got time for one or two quick questions.
Any advice on how to keep these numbers low? I'm sort of coming from the semantic perspective of nowadays and how species...
Just a second, there's a mic coming.
How does a particular species is being sort of identified to be different to other species? And when I see species of learning design, and how do you sort of, the first things that come to mind when I said answer shouted four to the question, how many? Social cognition, those very abstract species of design, and then variations on these, but you can quickly grow this number by simply trying to give them another name, which biologists have done for many centuries, sort of identifying and a primate is with opposable thumb. A human is the creature that can frown. Monkeys can't do that, apparently. So you kind of have this criteria for keeping the species or a particular variance in check. Have you come across any ideas? Well, do you have any ideas on how to keep this learning design specimen context in check of sorts?
Yes, there are some ideas, and it's partly expressed. I've lost the screen, but I was just flicking back to one where, on our next steps, we allowed ourselves to do this OED Lite, and I didn't mention it, but we've got sort of OED Plus, which is where we sort of gather a lot of the extra information. So we do feel that we'll fall into the trap of looking at taxonomies and hierarchies and ontologies, but they're our traps, and to help us understand the options, what we actually need to do is to find those few things that we can see can give people a key into ways to use our open education resources, and accept that we're not giving people the complete picture. So, for instance, the ones that Yanis has run through with us, and as I say, he's got about a dozen, but really we've concentrated on three of those, think, pair, share, pyramid, and jigsaw are the ones that, if you care to track them down, and they're classic approaches. But we found that you can very rapidly communicate these as ways to change how people see the open education resources. They see them as a collection of interesting challenges rather than the sequential set that they've been faced with. So they're very strong. So there's some very strong ones, and people vary them naturally. So you don't need to spell out all the variants, except that these will happen. I think the other side of it is that we're also looking at the tools one, and OpenLearn had a few tools which didn't get used nearly as much as we would wish. I think the Wookiee widget approach also opens up sort of, can we find neat tools that echo this nicely in an online way? So I'd be quite happy, really, for us to just stick with those three and have another three that weren't so heavily dependent on getting people together at the same time, because we know that that's another big issue. So you're going to look. So it's that sort of just do it, rather than feel that you're solving all of the world's problems. The other thing is that we don't use enough of each other's work. I thought Diana was very good in using ICOPA's patterns rather than using her own. There's this temptation to write your own. And we need to mine each other's work much more.
Patrick, I was reflecting in having been a staff developer that the models that have good purchase with practitioners talking about their teaching seem to have between 4 and 9 options. So I'm thinking of things like Bloom, Honey and Mumford's learning styles, the 8LEM, which obviously has 8, 3 or 4, which is what we came up with when we kind of did a review at a very high level of theoretical approaches. And it fits quite well with what I vaguely remember from cognitive psychology of the 7 ± 2, which is the limit of variation that we can deal with when we have to make a decision. And it seems to me that it doesn't matter how many species there are, it's when practitioners are actually making decisions. They need to know what are the decisions that matter, what are the options that matter of the infinite variety, and they need to have, let's say, between 4 and 10 options that really matter, within which they can be creative in their own right. And that seems to work.
Yes. I think it's from the HCI point of view, the 7 ± 2 is very interesting, that one, because it's fallen by the wayside to a certain extent in the web world, that you need to face people with the right level of choices, the sort of choices that they can manage at some points. And at others, you need to open up that there is a whole vista. So I think that it does back up the challenge that we're trying to give to people here, that we need people to latch on relatively quickly to a few things they can do to increase the benefit they get out of having arrived at some open education resources or planning to switch a series of lessons to using free resources. So I think we are in that area where complexity is just going to put people off and avoid people understanding that the options they have. I think then underneath it, though, there's going to be this huge variation which we can model by tracking things, by doing in-depth research that we can understand the variants and how they relate, but not face the users with that sort of complexity.
Perhaps if I can add a comment of my own on that, because the keeping it small fits with something we've seen in our early work on the LAMS activity planner. When I was first designing those, I thought I had to build many variants of every, so problem-based learning, or there need to be at least 20 versions of problem-based learning to, you know, be fair to the literature and so on, and that won't be enough. We tried some early versions with our students on this, and they just found it too overwhelming to see so many fractional differences of how problem-based learning might be run. And where we got to was one concrete example, one generic version of that concrete example, and in that, pick something that's just the most typical general version of that pedagogical approach. And that was it. And then you could have a link off to more advanced stuff somewhere if you wanted to look at it, but no one did. And so when we were doing our teaching strategies and we had role play and predictive observing and problem-based learning, we discovered that basically just one pretty good standard version of each of those was what people were willing to cope with as their first step. Now, having used that, they might be interested to go off and see 10 variants and pick one that suits them, but not till later. Yeah. And so I spent many, many days, several times, building huge sets of variations, and no one used them, drove my students nuts. And then I spent about half an hour knocking up a standard PBL, and everyone loved it. So I was like, okay. So there's something quite interesting, at least at the user adoption end, as you say, about keeping it quite small in what we offer. Although at the same time, we as an expert community in this field know there's great depth and variations under the hood, and trying to work out then how we track that, when would you expose that complexity back up and so on. But yeah, I was fascinated to see you say, because that matches something, you know, very much that we saw in the last few months.
Yeah, well, James, as usual, you're a bit ahead of us.
No, okay, well, we are up to afternoon tea, so I might, if we haven't already, thank you, Patrick, again, for your presentation.